This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
You know, we got Fish Fry Fridays kicking off this Friday. We're very excited. Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church in the city of St. Louis. Then we go to Cottleville, then to South County, Queen of All Saints on the 28th, Mary Magdalene in Brentwood on the 4th, Ott's Tavern in Millstadt, Illinois.
Millstadt.
I keep doing that, right?
That's not right, but it looks like Millstadt. I get it.
I got to fix that, though. You're going to correct that with me. I'm going to figure it out maybe in the next 30 days. By the 11th of April, I'll have that nailed down. And then, you know, we got Kilmeade coming in a couple of weeks as well. Tickets still on sale at thefactory.com and briankilmeade.com. VIP tickets. So, of course, Friday was quite something with President Trump and J.D. Vance and Zelensky in the White House.
I want one thing to happen.
Well, wait, I was going to play a cut of Friday first. Here it is.
I've empowered you to be a tough guy. And I don't think you'd be a tough guy without the United States. And your people are very brave. But you're either going to make a deal or we're out. And if we're out, you'll fight it out. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but you'll fight it out.
So then today, here's what the president said.
I want one thing to happen. I want all of those young people to stop being killed. They're being killed by the thousands every single week. Last week, 2,700 were killed. 2,700 young, in this case, just about all young boys from Ukraine and from Russia. And that's not young people from the United States, but it's on a human basis. I want to see it stop.
Yep. Well, we'll see if it is going to stop. And I don't know that anything was really, you know, soothed over the weekend. We have Carl Cannon, Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics, back with us on this Monday afternoon. How are you, Carl? Happy Monday.
I'm good, my friend. How have you been?
I'm pretty good. What I saw on Friday, and I aired the audio, was quite something. None of us have really seen anything like that. So let's just kind of start with Friday afternoon's events in the White House with Zelensky. What was your reaction to that?
Well, my first reaction was, and look, you and I are in the media, Mark, but I thought maybe the reporters and the cameras shouldn't have been there. There's a reason you conduct diplomacy behind closed doors. That's what I realized. Trump was irritated. I don't know why. And he got and Zelensky got irritated. And so they carped at each other. It wasn't their finest hour, to quote another statesman.
But don't you think, you know, because there's a lot of reaction to this. And here's, I'm just going to be honest with you. I liked it because, and I think that Trump indicated this during part of the event, that, you know, a lot of this stuff we don't see. It's not on full display. But for the American people to see this, I think, is quite illuminating and enlightening. Now, when it comes to cutting deals and diplomacy and all that, I get that you're supposed to do that behind closed doors. But there are a fair amount of people in this country, and I don't know, you know, what the term isolationist means anymore, Carl, outside of, you know, when you look at President Trump's policy of America first, and you look at how much money has been spent on this war. Now, the numbers, I think there's debatable numbers, but let's just say it's more than 120 million. Some people think, and Trump says $350 billion. I'm sorry. That's a lot of money. It's not just cash. It's arms, it's weapons, it's supplies. But I think a lot of people in November voted for some conditions on these loans and on these guarantees, and that's what was expressed on Friday. Now, it's not the prettiest way to get this done, and I don't know where this is going to take us, but I do think that the conversation represented a fair amount of where people are in this country.
Well, maybe, Mark. I like to give President Trump the benefit of the doubt on this because, as you imply, he people knew where he was. He wasn't full throated supporter of Ukraine, like Joe Biden. He wasn't. But he's gone too far the other way. He implied that Ukraine had invaded Russia, which is just factually wrong. He called Zelensky a dictator, which is also not true. They had an election there. It seems to me he's letting his irritation get the better of him. And that scene in the Oval Office you described, I mean, he says, I empowered you to be a tough guy. What did he empower? He wasn't in office. He keeps telling us, president, over and over again. He said it 100 times. That war wouldn't have started when I was president. I don't know if that's true or not. We'll never know. It's a counterfactual. That, right. I mean, I don't know why he says it even. But it was the previous administration that put all this money in, and both houses of Congress, both parties in both houses of Congress. But J.D. Vance and President Trump saying that Zelensky ought to thank them was discordant. It didn't make any sense to me. And I don't understand his attitude insofar as, you know, that little snit in the Oval Office. I do agree with you. The American people, we haven't sent any soldiers there, but we sent a lot of money and a lot of material. And if people are getting, and Trump's idea seems to be these are wasted lives. These people are slaughtering each other and they got to stop. And when I hear that, you know, I think of the Sermon on the Mount. I think of blessed are the peacemakers. I mean, if he really wants to stop this carnage in a way that somehow preserves Ukrainian sovereignty, I mean, look, they're not going to do it, but they should give them the Nobel Peace Prize.
I guess from a lot of people's perspective, I can kind of simplify it this way, because I don't have a big brain when it comes to managing, you know, these big geopolitical situations. I don't know enough about it. I'm not going to claim to. But here's what I kind of believe, and maybe not all of this is true. I believe that a few years ago, there was an opportunity to maybe win this war. I no longer think that that's possible. So if the war is not winnable, it makes zero sense to me and to a lot of people to pour hundreds more billions into an effort here. Now, the other part of this, and I completely understand people saying, well, wait a second, what is Putin being asked to do here, right? There needs to be a negotiation. That's a valid concern. I don't know what the answer is there. But what I do know is if we're not going to end it, if Zelensky wants to keep fighting, if there's not going to be anything ceded, well, then the fighting is just going to continue. More people are going to die. And then where are we in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years? So it seems like an endless situation without a solution.
Well, you say that, but we've had troops in Korea, Mark, since 1950, and they're still there. And the idea is South Korea is still a country. You've had generations of Koreans grow up, live, die, have children, living in a free country. I mean, the war was never winnable in that way.
Why? Right, Adolf but Hitler, we don't have U.S. troops to play here.
Adolf Hitler sent 40 divisions into Russia. They couldn't defeat the Russians. Russians are not going to lose a land war in their continent. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But you could have a stalemate, and then at some point, presumably, you got to have peace talks. But Vladimir Putin has not given any indication that he's receptive to that. And look, President Trump may know something we don't know about Putin. He may. But if he doesn't, he could end up with nothing. He could end up as looking naive. I've got my fingers crossed here, Mark. Yeah. I hope for the best. But I think dealing with Putin is dealing with a very dangerous and unstable character.
Absolutely, I'm not going to deny that. I would agree with that. And I think a lot of people know that. I don't know where this takes us, but it certainly was interesting on Friday. So you know, this is all kind of draped around everything else that's going on in this country with Doge, and the freakout on Doge kind of continues. What do you make of the continued reaction on the left?
You know, a lot of these people, they're just going to oppose Donald Trump, whatever he does. And we can discount them. I mean, I don't mean that they're not loyal Americans and they're not sincere, but their minds aren't open and we don't need to talk about them. But there's a lot of people who voted for Trump, millions of them who are looking at this thing and saying, well, wait a minute. He didn't talk about this exactly during the campaign. He talked about DEI and immigration and inflation, but he didn't really say he was going to decimate the federal workforce. This seems to be coming from Elon Musk. And I think people are waiting to see if Musk may have gotten the wrong idea. He took over Twitter, paid $40-something billion for it, laid off 75% of the workforce, and saw no demonization in service. And so now maybe that country was the company was the all-time feather bedding outfit in history.
Right.
But that, I don't know, is the federal government that way? Musk seems to think so. I
know there's going to be some people that are going to, the election was still very close, going to be very curious about this, question it. But I still feel, maybe this is my naivete, but there's a lot of us that are cheering this on and are rooting for it because we feel like there's never been an opportunity like this before. So I get the scorched earth is going to claim some victims. There's going to be some, collateral damage, but
there's going to be veterans who got their job because they were combat veterans and had a preference and they're going to be laid off. That's already happening. I don't think anybody voted for that.
No, nobody voted for that. So are there things that perhaps need to be corrected? I would stipulate, that there are. But I think what they're finding is they don't know any way to go about this by, doing it in reverse where they can make sure that there's no casualties at first. But there's going to be, and I've said this before, Carl, there's going to be repercussions. I can't imagine that we don't have members of Congress right here in St. Louis that are getting an earful. Now, the problem is disseminating whether that earful is from, organized strategy from Democrats who are flooding town halls or from, people who are taxpayers who say, hey, wait, we voted for a lot of this, but we don't support this. And I do think there's a fair amount.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Almased with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That right now.
Well, I'd say two things about that. And the first thing is some of this will be answered presumably tomorrow night when he gives his State of the Union. That's not the State of the Union. The first annual joint address to a joint session of Congress. It's going to look like a State of the Union address. And I think he's going to lay this out. Elon Musk finally explained this in a way that you and I would be familiar with, but they just started doing this stuff and sort of said, well, we'll explain, we'll tell you. Yeah, we'll tell you. They didn't say we'll tell you about it later. They acted like everybody understood that this was something that needed to be done, cutting the federal workforce, stopping this money from flowing out into the Treasury, that it was inflationary, that it was stupid, that it was crazy. They sort of assumed we said that. But finally, Elon Musk said a week ago in that cabinet meeting at the White House, and he said, listen, we came in with a $2 trillion debt. That's unsustainable. That's going to bankrupt our country. You can't have a $2 trillion federal deficit every single year in peacetime. The federal debt's $36 trillion. There's no way to pay it back. It will bankrupt us. That's a good rap, and that's true. And I expect Trump will talk about this Tuesday night. That's the first half of it. The second half of it, though, is this really the right way to go about it, to have Elon Musk? He's this genius, but he doesn't know everything about everything. Would it have been better to take a department like the VA or Small Business Administration? SBA is run by Kelly Loeffler, right? She had more success in business than Donald Trump ever did. Say, hey, Kelly, I want a report on my desk in 6 months. Can the SBA budget be cut in half? And if so, how do we do it? Maybe that would have been a better way to go about this.
Maybe, but I think what people might say is that, man, and you've been around for a long time, how many times do you see blue ribbon panels and commissions and recommendations and stuff like that? And
we're talking about orderly budgeting. Look, they cut the Clinton administration. I covered them. They cut $3 billion out in this Rego thing, reinventing government, and it kind of lost steam. They lost their interest in it, but they actually proved you can do it. I don't say there's no fat in the government. We all know there's a lot, right? But I just to do it in a way. And again, I'm not talking about what the Democrats are saying, because they're the loyal opposition. But this is you and I talking. There's an orderly process to budgeting, and Elon Musk is a kind of impatient guy who doesn't take that route. So look, maybe this will work. But in the meantime, you don't want to be firing people. You don't want to be firing people you don't know who they are or what they do.
Well, I'll say one thing about tomorrow night, and this is, and I've been talking about this for years, not just, you know, weeks or days, but there needs to be, and this is where I am concerned, there needs to be honesty about, you know, how much can actually be trimmed in order to affect the deficit. And there's no way to do it without addressing Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. And they have to be honest about that. Republicans should be honest about that. I have to ask you one more question, though, on the topic of the media. Carl Cannon is here, Washington Bureau Chief. Obviously, there's been a bit of a dust up in that White House briefing room, the Correspondents Association not happy with this decision over the AP. You're kind of a longtime guy in Washington. You know how these things work. What do you say about this, Carl?
Well, I was president of the White House Correspondents Association, and we always worked out the White House pool. The White House wanted it. Every administration wanted us to do it. They certainly didn't want to have to do it. And we had an in-town pool rotation with about 30 news organizations that cover the place regularly. They go with the president where he goes. They brought in for these photo ops. It's a system that worked. And again, here's the issue. Donald Trump certainly is within his rights in his White House and his press shop to say, you know what, AP, Bloomberg, Reuters, okay, maybe, but because those are the guys that are there every day. But what about these other organizations that are more friendly to us? What alternative media? We want to look at expanding the idea of who gets to ask the president questions. I think that's healthy. I think it's good. I think they're well within their rights. And I personally would have been very supportive of that. That makes sense. But to kick AP out of the rotation, the pool rotation, because the brass at AP decided not to change Gulf of Mexico to Gulf of America, that's crazy. And AP issued a very temperate statement. We understand both sides of this. We're not going to do it because we're an international organization and the rest of the world hasn't recognized this. And it's been called that for 400 years and the Mexicans don't want it. But we will acknowledge that President Trump calls it this. They made a very temperate sort of conciliatory statement, and it wasn't enough for Trump. And it makes me think they had another beef with the AP. I think they think AP, you know, went woke a few years ago.
But I think that's legit.
Encourages all this kind of thing, especially on transgender politics. I think there's a bigger issue.
Well, there
is,
though, but there should be a bigger issue. That's what people don't understand. Because, look, you can't convince me, because I've worked with the AP for 40 years. I've been on the board of the AP here in Missouri years ago. You can't convince me that they're an independent, non-biased news organization. That's sad, because they don't come off that way.
Well, they're independent, but the idea is they're no longer unbiased. That's the allegation, and there's some evidence for that.
Right, absolutely. All right, Carl. Hey, thanks for joining me here on this Monday afternoon. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right, take care. I actually have a little audio from Julie Pace, who is in charge of the AP, that I'll share here in just a minute to kind of put an exclamation point on some of that stuff as well. Don't forget, we got a Monday edition of Sue's News after the top of the hour.
Get more at 971talk.com.